Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are joined by one of our duty experts on Latin America. He is Russ Dallin, the president and editor-in-chief of the Latin America Herald Tribune. He is also the head of an international investment bank, Caracas Capital Markets, long a resident of the Caracas, not just capital markets, but the community, and deeply familiar with and concerned, I know, about what is going on in Venezuela. He also served in the past as a president of Venezuela's Daily Journal. It's always good to catch up with him, but first let me say a happy new year to you, Russ. I hope it will be for the people of Venezuela, and I'm anxious to get an update from you on them.
Thank you, Secretary Gaffney. It's always always a pleasure and a learning opportunity every time we speak.
Well, thank you. I certainly learn a lot, and I think our audience does as well. So we have been covering throughout 2017 sort of the death spiral of Venezuela. Russ, I'm hoping that there is some end in sight. There was an interview recently that I caught on National Public Radio with an opposition figure. He seemed to be speaking for a lot of folks in Venezuela who were clearly in a state of despond about their inability to move the government there from its disastrous course economically and politically. But he basically said something that really caught my ear. It was that it is impossible, basically, to protest a government when you have to spend 5 hours a day queuing just to get the basic necessities of food and other requirements for daily life. Is that still the case? And is that the explanation for why things seem to have, at least for the moment, died down in terms of the opposition?
It is indeed one of the problems. It's not just that you have to spend time queuing for food, but you have to spend time queuing for everything else as well. If you needed an example in your and my lifetime, it would be Russia before the fall of the wall, when they finally gave up the ghost that this system was ever going to work. That, you know, it wasn't just that you had to schedule your plumber 10 years in advance. You have that problem, and then you have the second problem that the government controls the food. So, it's not a free market anymore. The government basically controls all of the money in the economy. So it's not just that you can't oppose the government because you might not catch your food, but the government controls all of the jobs. They control the main industry, which is oil, and all of the contracts that flow from it. So basically, it's a one-company town, and the government owns the company.
Speaking of the jobs, the government has now increased wages, which one would think would be a welcome development. And yet, as you all have reported in the Latin American Herald Tribune, it ain't necessarily good news that it may, in fact, simply stoke greater inflation. Talk about that.
You know, it's hard for us to even imagine what is going on and explain it to the people outside of Venezuela, because you have a country now that the last 5 months, inflation has been over 50% a month. So in the last year, they've had 7 wage increases. This past week, they increased the wages again by 40% to $7 a month. Basically, they raised it to about 800,000 bolivars a month, if you include the food ticket. The actual minimum wage itself, well, let's just leave it at 800,000 bolivars a month. That's basically less than $7 a month now. The black market rate for the dollar has now fallen this morning to 130,000 bolivars a dollar.
So what you're talking about is essentially the people of Venezuela, not all of them, obviously, but the great majority of them, must be starving to death simply because they don't have the wherewithal to get access to food. Even if the government will make it available to them, they can't pay for it. This is clearly such a desperate state of affairs that one can understand why we're now hearing, Russ Dallin, calls from prominent Venezuelan figures outside of the country for something that would have seemed unthinkable even a year ago. Talk a little bit about the latest recommendations that are now being heard and whether there's likely to be a positive response to them in light of this terrible, terrible humanitarian as well as, I would argue, strategic situation.
Yes, someone has finally put it out there that all of these things are terrible, that Venezuela is a humanitarian crisis, that infant mortality is skyrocketing, that children and adults are starving. And someone has finally put it out there that our experience in these kind of situations is that, Cuba being a prime example, when the government is so corrupted, as in Panama, where you have narco-traffickers leading the country, and the people are starving, and these people are not going to go out by democratic means. They've had three bogus elections in just the last year where the government, who is opposed by 80% of the people, won handily with only 20% support. An amazing, amazing thing that if those electoral tools are not going to work, you're going to need intervention. And so a former minister of planning, one of the leading intellectual lights out of Venezuela, Ricardo Hausmann, who is a professor at Harvard, was a minister of planning in under the administration of Carlos Andres Perez, who served twice as president of Venezuela, put out that the end game is that we're going to need foreign intervention, an international force, coalition of the willing, as he called it. And basically, because the opposition controls the Congress now, although they've just been essentially neutered and they've put these other bodies over them to try and keep them repressed and down, that the opposition could impeach the president and vice president. The president, by the way, his nephews were convicted in the United States, in New York, in federal court for drug trafficking and sentenced to 18 years. The vice president is on the drug kingpin list since February. He's a young man, 43. But so far, being on that drug kingpin list, they've seized over $500 million in the United States of assets linked to him and dollar accounts. So we're talking about significant narco traffickers who have no place to go.
So, Russ Dellen, in terms of a call for what, let's be clear, is a military intervention, how is that likely to happen under present circumstances? The OAS has been certainly making sounds about their concerns about what's happening in Venezuela, as I think the Trump administration has. But is there any realistic prospect of such an intervention? And if so, how do you think it might come about?
And that's the interesting thing about Professor Hausmann's argument. If the National Assembly declares the president and the vice president impeached and votes to replace them, and the military locks it out, which they will most certainly do because they have been loyal and they're involved in the drug trafficking as well and all the other efforts of corruption, the National Assembly would invite the coalition of the willing to come and help them out. And that wouldn't have to go through the United Nations, where China and Russia would cast a veto vote, because it would be invitation.
Yeah. So, but the question, I guess, that occurs is there, in fact, a National Assembly at this point, the Constitutional Assembly having replaced it and changed the Constitution and all the rest of it? I mean, does that entity that was controlled by the opposition still exist in any sense? And if it does, could it meet to have such a vote any place in the country?
It could. Of course, they would do that at great peril themselves, because they would join the hundreds of political prisoners that the country already has put behind bars, and a la Cuba. But, you know, a new Supreme Court was elected by the National Assembly, and they immediately were all arrested, and they had to flee the country. There's an alternative Supreme Court already in exile here in Washington, D.C., that meets at the OAS headquarters.
So this may be the answer, is we've got to get all these people out so that they can convene out of country. Russ, there's so much more to talk about. We are hard out of time. I look forward to visiting with you often in 2018, and pray that this will be a year in which the liberation of the people of Venezuela takes place. And we appreciate what you do to cover their plight and otherwise to help the rest of us understand what's going on there and the stakes in the Latin American Herald Tribune. Keep up the good work. Come back to us soon, my friend. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.